So you were just at E3. Tell us a little bit about your experiences down there.
I had the opportunity to go to E3 thanks to Xbox Fan Fest. And that's partly because I'm here on a five-week fellowship given to me. The opportunity was given to me by the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust in the UK. And the idea is that they allow for projects, they provide funding for projects that could potentially have a positive impact on the UK, in particular the UK games industry in this case. I had to go through a massive amount of forms and interviews and shortlist processes and all sorts of things. But eventually I got granted the fellowship, and I then had to get talking to people to try and have things to do over here. I got talking to Aaron Greenberg from Microsoft, the head of games marketing at Xbox, who's helped me out previously with reviews I've written, accessibility reviews, including my one for the Gears of War Xbox One S Limited Edition bundle last year. And he kind of advised me to wait around a little. And fortunately, I did, because FanFest tickets went on sale. I booked one for myself and one for Sharon, who's sitting over there somewhere. Hello. Yeah. And we went, we had the chance to go to FanFest. FanFest is an event that Microsoft holds, I think it's every year now. And it allowed 500 people to go to the briefing, to the Microsoft press conference. I was in the crowd on a special chair that they'd reserved for me, which was actually a haptic gaming chair. They hadn't told me they were going to do it, which was great. I was just like, what? Oh, my God. And then I met, I had the fortune to see Aaron Greenberg, Major Nelson, and Rukari Austin from Mind Galaxy all in about 20 minutes before the briefing had even started.
Wow.
So it was all very rapid fire at that point. But E3 was less, not productive. It was less friendly in places, although individuals from Microsoft were very helpful. Matt Chang in particular, I'll give a shout out to him, because he kind of walked me around on the second day and introduced me to a large number of people who otherwise I might not have met. And it was interesting to go around E3 as a consumer, but as a person who advocates for accessibility, but not be in the media. Because when you're in the media, you can talk to all the developers and get early access and whatnot. But when you're not in the media, you get developers like Sony, who don't really seem to have a place where they can talk to, and Capcom and Nintendo, where they basically say, oh, you're not media, get out, we don't want to talk to you because you don't have an appointment and all of our slots are booked. So that was a very frosty reception from those guys.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But you guys were fine.
Well, hey, that's great. Win one for the good guys.
No, too right.
So tell me, let's back up, though. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, again, just to call a spade, I think a lot of people, when they hear the words blind gamer, that seems like an oxymoron, right? It seems like those two words can't go together. And yet you, like I said, are a fantastic KI player. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into gaming?
Ooh, okay. Well, that was where my presentation was going to go.
Okay,
so that's
nice.
Basically, I had a computer when I was about 7 or so, and it was less a question of, okay, press these buttons in a specific order. It was more of a question of, ooh, what does this do? And promptly nosediving a plane into literally unseen territory. So that was interesting. But there were games installed. The games I was playing were games installed via sighted assistance. I didn't really know what a screen reader was at that point in time. And then I got to try my first audio-only game, which was Grizzly Gulch Western Extravaganza, sort of 4 or 5 key Western game, running around a town. Well, not running around, literally just clicking. Almost, it was the equivalent of a point and click, kind of. So you'd walk around the town, ask people for information, gamble, and get into gunfights. All great things to do at a really young age. but then I went on from that game to Shades of Doom, which is basically the epitome of audio-only first-person shooters, even though it's like over a decade and a half old now. Wow. It still plays quite well. There's no online. So Halo at this time in the mainstream sort of area of things was doing online multiplayer and everything. But unfortunately, no audio game has really done that. That's fine, because that's what mainstream does best. So, I went on to mainstream from there. So sort of PlayStation 1 and Street Fighter EX Plus. Yeah, I know. Decent game, really. Decent game. Although the unfortunate thing with a fair amount of those games was they were in mono. Tekken is still in mono after 20 years, and I'm still not very happy about it. Wow. I know there's people just go, what? Really? And I'm like, yes, that is definitely a thing. So I talked to Harada on Twitter about that recently, actually, and he seemed to be under the impression that a surround sound system would help. Now, I'm personally not convinced, but that's not to say I won't give it a try if I get the chance. But so from the PlayStation 1 all the way through to sort of PlayStation 2 and 3, you know, I carried on gaming, and then I'd used an Xbox 360, but then I hadn't really sort of got my teeth into it. But then the Xbox One and all the accessibility improvements happened. Not before I'd played KI for quite a significant period of time and gotten fairly good at it. And then that's where my sort of advocacy started, because I talked to the developers at Iron Galaxy, because I'd had a massive problem in Killer Instinct. Online, for those of you who don't know Killer Instinct, it's a very combo-focused game, and there's a little gauge to your side of the screen that indicates how close you are to blowing out a combo. It's called the KV meter, or the knockdown value. Now, that didn't have any audio cues when I started playing in Season 2. Yeah, that's a big problem when it's a pivotal part of the fighting system. Mm. So online, everybody else, well, or the majority of people I was playing, I guessed were sighted players. They could see, they could end their combos. I couldn't see. I couldn't reliably end my combos other than by guesswork. And so I talked to the developers, I talked to IG, and I said, this is horrendous. I can't do this. This is a real problem. What I didn't expect was for the community to rally around me and basically be like, oh my God, this is a thing. We need to sort this out. And there was one guy who basically said, playing video games isn't the done thing if you're blind. I work with blind people. He probably got shot down and run out of the forums for quite a significant period of time, as far as I'm aware. But what we didn't know, me and the rest of the people who'd supported me, was that Iron Galaxy were working on a patch behind the scenes. And a few patches later, they introduced a rudimentary version of the KV meter audio cues. And from that point forwards, my gameplay improved dramatically.
I bet.
You can actually, there's footage that I have of me playing before and after, and the change is ridiculously convincing. So, yeah, I mean, and then KI, Halo, Gears, with teams with those last two. Looking into sort of Overwatch and stuff, but I'm trying to get review copies sorted for those as well.
So that brings up a good question. You know, for those of you, for those in the audience who haven't had a chance to maybe see some of your YouTube videos or whatnot, or how you play, can you just very briefly describe what it is about the audio systems of certain games that make them playable for you?
If the audio design is detailed enough, if there's cues for things that you need to know about visually, so say in, I'm going to cite a slightly older game here, but Karateka, if any of you guys know that. It was a game that was originally an 80s title by the guy who did Prince of Persia, Jordan Mechner. And it was remade in around 2012. But the way they redid the combat system was, when you ran up to a new enemy, if you had to block an attack, before the attack happened, there'd be a musical cue to tell you how many attacks to block. So it'd be like a ding for one attack, or doo-doo-doo for like three. And you'd block, you'd press the block button that many times in a sequence to try and block all the attacks. So systems like that where, you know, almost pre-tells, you might call it. Mm. So, you know, visual cues are there, but the focus is on the audio as well.
Okay.
You know, so games where they have that is good. Games where you can have granular control. So in KI, you can turn the announcer up and down, like on its own. You can turn the ambience up and down. But the real one is being able to turn the audio cues for the HUD up and down. Nice. So you can see your KV. You can turn that up as loud as you need to. But the strange thing is, it's on at zero by default when you get the game. So any blind player who wants to just jump in has to then ask for a menu guide, go in, find the option, then turn it up, and then carry on playing.
Oh, okay.
Which is a big problem when sometimes menu guides are very scarce. So,
you know, I think for some of us it may be easy for us to imagine how audio cues might work in a very specific type of game, for example, probably a fighter or a game.
Yeah.
But you said there's a first-person shooter out there that's audio only. Can you tell us a little bit about what that experience is like? Because I think for a lot of people, that's really hard to conceptualize.
I'm going to say, compared to Halo, Gears, and any other mainstream shooter, it's boring. Sort of 1-3. I think Bryce Johnson actually called it, Pac-Man with guns, I believe the terminology was. And if you look at the rudimentary graphics that game utilized, you can kind of see why. But, you know, in terms of, it's very simplistic. I mean, yes, it did have an update recently, but it didn't overhaul the gameplay in a massive way. It just overhauled basically the sound design rather than the actual gameplay.
Okay.
But that's fine. You know, that happens. It's an old title. But, you know, you sort of walk through rooms, you hear sounds for, you know, the monsters. You have like a scope that you can turn on and off. That drains battery, which is interesting. That has its own little battery, which is unusual for a shooter, but it works quite well because audio only, you can target the monsters anyway without necessarily needing the scope. But the scope's there, and I personally use it even though I've been playing the game for years. And there is no online multiplayer in this game either, completely single player. So you're wandering through, you've got voice navigation, that's not the best term. There is an in-world explanation for it, which is quite clever. The fact that you have this little device strapped to your belt that is then telling you information in these darkened hallways. So, like, the passage continues left. You can get keys to tell you how far monsters are away, objects, and all of that. But, yeah, no, it's very simplistic compared to, like, a Halo or an Overwatch or a Gears in terms of, like, detail.
Interesting. So do you feel like AAA titles that are complex, whether it's a first-person shooter or a real-time strategy, do you feel like that complexity is inherently a hard stop for blind gaming, or do you feel like there's opportunities there to make those games enjoyable and playable for folks who have vision impairments?
There's massive opportunities now, and that's what most developers don't seem to quite get, you know, when a game can be accessible. So Tekken 7, I know we're going back to fighting games, but you know, that's the example that comes to mind first of all. You know, Tekken 7 doesn't have sort of, it doesn't use any of the speech synthesis APIs. Injustice 2 doesn't use it yet, but the developers are aware. You know, Killer Instinct, the guys are aware. Turn 10, I'm talking to at the moment about sort of an accessible Forza, that kind of thing. I did a demo last year with 343 and discussed the possibilities of an accessible Halo. And, you know, real-time strategy games, Josh flagged up a point earlier saying about, you know, anything turn-based is a good start. Not so true when you can't see the menus, because that's the big problem. You know, if you can't see, I mean, if they don't wrap, that makes it slightly less of a problem, but by so small an amount that it might as well not be, you know, might as well not have been done. If you're going to make your game accessible, start as early as you can. Get disabled playtesters in. You know, you see all those YouTubers doing pre-release footage?
Yeah.
Why can't those people be disabled advocates who know how mainstream accessibility works? I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to Microsoft HQ the other day and actually talk to the Killer Instinct team, and I got to play a character that isn't even released yet early. And I got to post that footage up by permission from the developers. And it was, the reactions were just shocked. They were like, not only, how did you get this character? But it was like, oh, what was it like to play him? And I'm like, not sure how much I can tell you, but I'll tell you these couple of things. So being able to give that information before a game, not a game in this case, but a character is released, is quite useful. Because then you're having to learn less as you go.
So engaging the community is obviously something that seems very important.
Of course.
So early on is one key point.
You can retrofit things, but it doesn't necessarily always work. I mean, KI was fortunate that it did.
So from an audio perspective, what are like those initial questions that, the fundamentals, rather, let's think about it that way.
Yeah.
The fundamentals that people should be thinking about that are maybe genre agnostic.
Ooh, that's tough. Genre agnostic is very tough because, I mean, the first thing that it seems that the guys at Team Xbox are pushing, which I'm really glad about, and Sony, you should be listening to this, is narrated menus and the speech synthesis API. So the speech synthesis, that is really difficult to say.
Yeah.
The speech synthesis API, there we go. is basically a way to pass your in-game text through the same systems that power Narrator and Xbox One. Now, there's a possibility that it might work under Windows 10, but that's not happening at the moment, apparently. I don't know the ins and outs. I'm not a developer. I don't work for Team Xbox at all. But the basic way it works is you give the API a piece of text. It then renders the text as an audio file, and then it passes it through to whatever channel you're routing it through with a couple of other properties like voice and language, etc. That's really useful. So say I buy the next, say I'm, I know that the next Halo is going to have accessibility features. I can then go and buy that game day one for the full price. Maybe, who knows, maybe even like the collector's edition with all the extra things that they give you. I don't know. And I wouldn't have to worry because I know I could get into a game myself. I could get through all the submenus myself, configure everything to my liking, audio, you know, forge maps, everything. You know, that can't happen at the moment, but, you know, a genre agnostic thing would be get all your menus accessible day one. Or, and hell, if you can, and if you really want to make it interesting, give out your menus pre-release so that anybody who has no sight can find those guides, go in day one, and even if the menus aren't necessarily accessible for a technical reason, and I don't want to see it being used as an excuse to just give menu guides rather than making the menus fully workable.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. But, you know, if you've got both, brilliant. If you've got narrated menus on their own or narrated in-game UI, which is a thing you can do as well, that's fine. But having both would be the ideal situation.
Interesting. I want to save time for questions.
Of course.
And we're actually going to be rejiggering the schedule a little bit today due to some a little bit of last-minute speaker change-up. I want to talk to you, though, or I want maybe the last question I have is... So from a blind gamer standpoint, there's this plethora of inaccessible titles.
Yeah.
There's also games that are designed specifically for people who are visually impaired.
Yes.
Now, if I'm a developer or a designer and I'm not familiar with that space, what are some ways that I can better familiarize myself in terms of are there audio-only games or sites I should be visiting to try out different titles? Are there techniques that I can use as a developer to help, you know, simulate the experience? Do you have what sorts of examples do you have or suggestions?
In terms of sites, sometimes it can get rather biased. I mean, I'm not afraid to say I am slightly biased myself, but there are... members of those communities. So, because the way I kind of see it is there's sort of gamers without sight who enjoy mainstream games and want to see those become accessible, and there's gamers without sight who aren't necessarily bothered.
Oh.
And, you know, you can sometimes see that, but, you know, if you go through, say, your Able Gamers or your Special Effect, you're not necessarily going to find these people.
Mm.
But, you know, if you put it out as a general community request, say, if you say, oh, the next Gears of War, the Coalition are looking for, you know, testers or whatever with a disability to do it remotely. That's the other thing as well. Don't just do tests in the US. Do tests worldwide. Because, you know, I can't come down the road. I don't live here, is the point I'm trying to make. I can't come down and just join in the playtest lab. I can't come down and join in with, like, the feedback crew. I have to find the funds to even go to E3 and all of that. So, you know, to be able to do all of these events in sort of the UK and around the world. I mean, I know there are studios in the UK as well. That's fine. But, you know, publicize that as well. Don't just provide an almost false impression that all your studios are in one place.
Okay.
That's fine. But you were saying about techniques, though.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one because there's a really, really, really easy technique that you can use to test whether your game on a basic level before you do anything is accessible. Can anybody tell me what that might be? I'm trying. Well, you're all kind of close enough, even though none of you guys actually said it that loudly. it's not so much closing your eyes, but making it impossible for you to see. There's a difference because we had a scenario the other day in a presentation I delivered where people were cheating. I said, close your eyes, and apparently people were still like, yeah, look at it, open our eyes. So, you know, put an actual, like, full-on blindfold over your face. and then try and play the game with like a headset and then see how far you get, how lost you get, and how frustrating it is that when you've bought a game day one, you can't actually play it properly. Wow. I mean, that's why I do what I do. I write as much as I don't have a job to speak of, you know, regardless of games industry or otherwise, but I do write accessibility reviews. I contact developers and ask for review copies. I was fortunate enough to contact Harvey Smith, who is one of the guys who works with Dishonored, a franchise that Josh mentioned earlier. And I reviewed Dishonored 2. And we got further with Copilot, me and I had sighted assistance, of course. We got further with Copilot than we did with me just trying to play the game and figure it out. And, you know, that's a big thing. If, you know, if a player can't figure, you know, stealth games can be done. You know, you could have an audio-only stealth game. They've not really been tried, but that's because those principles haven't kind of come through into audio-only yet in as big a way. So there's no, like, there's not an Assassin's Creed or like a Dishonored to work with. But that's fine, because if people want to seek these new experiences, they're probably going to have to branch out anyway into mainstream content, which is fine.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, I just want to say as well, yeah. There is one game which is going to be a really interesting release when it comes out, because it doesn't bill itself as an audio game or an audio-only game or anything like that. It's called A Hero's Call, and it's billed as an accessible RPG. Now, that's key wording, because accessible RPG doesn't say we're catering to blind people or we're catering just to sighted people or whatever. You know, it's saying we're catering to both markets, because they're releasing it first as an audio-only title for those who backed it on Kickstarter, etc. But they're also working on a graphics upgrade. And I've been talking with the team, I've been talking with a few individuals, and the possibility exists that it may be, in future, the first accessible, fully playable RPG on Xbox One X.
Wow.
I mean, we don't know whether that's going to happen, but I really hope it does, because then it won't be, oh, you're playing a game meant for blind people, kind of thing. It will be, wow, I want to play this accessible game because it sounds interesting and you don't have to use the graphics. I've had sighted people say that. I've had sighted people say, I really want to play this. I had Ken Lobb, the creator of Killer Instinct, say just that. You know, and that was before he, you know, either of us have actually played the game. He says, you know, I want to play this. And that's a really good sign. If accessible games can become the norm, then, you know, that's the best way to be, because then audio-only games, if they want to learn, if the developers of audio-only games want to learn from mainstream concepts, they can, but it's their choice.
Yeah.
The idea I'm trying to sort of promote in a way is that mainstream is the way forward.
Fantastic. And just as a quick aside, we actually honored the makers of A Hero's Call.
I know.
with an award at GDC, even though at the time they weren't shipping on our platform, just because we thought what they were doing was so cool, ID went out and gave them an award. And now, yeah, word on the street is that
but there's technical issues.
Yeah. There's always technical issues.
I mean, look at my presentation.
I know, right? Well, you know, and speaking of, I know we're running a little over because of those technical issues, but I really want to give people an opportunity, a chance to ask you questions. And so, again, I'm going to ask Tara. Yeah. Okay.
Everything okay?
Sorry, she was just climbing under the desk there to get out. I'm going to get the microphone, and then let's take a few questions for Sightless, and if you've got, you know, just fire away, raise your hands.
Oh yeah, and introduce yourselves as you voice questions as well, because then I know who you are and what you're doing.
Hi, so I'm Tamara. I actually work with Brennan at 343 as a developer in the UI team.
Uh-huh.
So Brennan has been educating me a lot around accessibility in games. And one of the conversations we've had is around tropes about blind people, not just as gamers, but as characters in games or in the media. Like he mentioned about the enhanced senses and things like that. So I was wondering, what other tropes are there around that actually should be avoided when you not just design for blind gamers, but also if you want to put a blind character in your game or just in what you're designing?
That's an interesting one, because there's three blind or visually impaired individuals I can think of in mainstream gaming. That's the character in Beyond Eyes, which, yeah, Beyond Eyes was a
No, wait, before you stop, because I don't think people understand this. So I think that's a really good one to call out.
I'm going to try and express this in the best possible way I can. I've not played the game, and there is a reason for that. Because a game about, I believe it's about a girl who loses her cat and she's got no sight or something.
Yeah, she's blind and has lost her kitty.
Yeah, and the trouble is, it's basically a fully visual experience. I mean, yes, there's sound, but the idea of navigating the world is presented through visuals. And I think the word counterintuitive barely does that idea any kind of, you know, barely gives that idea any kind of weight to how bad it is. You know, if you want to make a game that focuses around blindness, make it accessible to blind people. Really? I mean,
yeah.
Perception as well.
Yeah.
I've not played Perception. That's a game about a blind person, as far as I understand it. I think that might be a person who loses their sight. I'm not entirely sure on the details on that.
With Perception, so it's a girl who's always been blind, but she starts having, I don't know what to call it, visions.
That's fine.
In her dreams of a building, and then you go to the building and you're trying to look around the building, but she kind of uses this, like, they call it echolocation, but basically it's a visual things. Experience
yeah.
as well.
Yeah. And yeah, and that, I mean, those are the two examples that I can think of that jump out at me. And, you know, and then the other one is Kenshi from Mortal Kombat. Now that's kind of cool. It's like blind guy with a sword. I'm kind of down with that. Really difficult character to play though, and I tried. But you know, the representation isn't that bad there, because there's kind of an in-world thing of, oh, he's got like telepathic abilities and stuff, and it's like, okay, we're stretching this beyond the norm of like tropes. And I think the best way, say you were going to have a blind Spartan or a blind ODST in the next Halo. You know, you wouldn't need to do much, because the in-world explanations can already be put in. So you can say, oh, the next iteration of the Mjolnir armor has inbuilt systems to accommodate for a lack of sight after, I don't know, a squad of 20 Spartans were all blinded by a Covenant plasma shot, you know. You can throw in-world explanations, and as long as it makes enough sense to the consumer, and as long as it plays well, you won't even have to theoretically change anything. You know, you could even have the fact that they're blind as a reveal. You know, maybe not overdo it as a cliche, but have it as one thing of, you know, they're all in the dark and the blind guy is taking point, you know, taking the lead, and it's, or the blind, you know, the blind character generally is taking the lead, and they're like, hang on, why are you up the front? It's like, because I've done this before, you know. And so, you know, it would be less, you know, you'd have less to deal with in a sense about potential backlash, because you're not really playing into the hands of those tropes.
Great, thank you. Other question?
Just to kind of piggyback on that, hi, my name is Patrick O'Leary, and I have Tourette syndrome. And so for me, representation of my particular disability is absolutely horrendous, both in games and every form of media. I think the best thing you can do is, one, just talk to people, and yeah. Two, hire them too. that's just... You're going to have, for my particular condition, every single person has a different representation of it. You're not necessarily going to make by trying to split the difference and kind of make an average case, you're not necessarily going to make a completely accurate case either.
No, okay. No, that makes sense. It would just be about sort of consultancy then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of playtesting and consultancy. And for playtesting, what do you need? Blind people in your studios.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take one more. And one other thing to remind people is that all of our speakers will be available at the mixer tonight, so you'll have a chance to have one-on-one conversations. So if there was a question you were too afraid to ask in front of the group or didn't have time to ask...
I'm familiar with that as well. It's like, how do you play this? And I'm like, why didn't you ask me earlier? I can teach you.
All right. Who had the microphone? Oh, there we go. M.
Hey, Sightless. My name's M, just like the letter, 13th letter of the alphabet. Anyways, I saw that you have filed some complaints on Xbox Live, and I'm curious about your experience, because you're in the competitive games, right?
Yep.
And so, like, I would like to know what your experience is. Was it a good experience? filing complaints. Is there anything that we could do better to make that a better space that's more fun and enjoyable for you?
That's a very interesting one. That's one I definitely didn't expect to be.
And thank you, by the way. We definitely took action on that
person. I'm not even sure what I said at the time. So it's like, we filed complaints. And it's like, yeah, that was a while ago, probably. No, but in terms of, you know, making it a I mean, I enjoy being able to say to people, oh, you know, I'm a blind gamer. Like, I play without sight. And they're like, oh my God, okay. And then that normally strikes sort of curiosity in conversations from there. But sometimes it's a case of people just don't, like, they don't understand how frustrating it is, say, if you're on the bottom of a map, you're trying to find where they are, and they're just sitting at the top sniping you. And they're like, ha ha, I got you. And I'm like, do you realize how boring this is? Seriously? Do you realize how unentertaining this actually is? And, you know, stuff like that, being able to educate people how gaming works without sight in a consistent way. So being able to, I just kind of had this idea of deliberately making their screen turn off during the middle of a game. Just kind of, just press a button, like just, and then they're like, ah, where's my screen gone?
even the playing field.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I've been working on a Forge project, as you know, Brannon, because I've been telling you about it. I've been working on a Forge project with a couple of people. It needs to expand, and I haven't managed to sort anything out with it yet. The idea is it's going to be the maps are going to be fully darkened, and we don't know what we're doing about the UI yet, but we'll look into that to basically stop sighted people from cheating. I know that sounds a really harsh way of saying it, but it's the best way I can probably put it within a short time frame, because the idea is I want to be able to play alongside people and have the same amount of a chance as actually so getting kills and all of that. Because Halo and first-person shooters at the moment aren't accessible really to the same degree if you've got no sight. Because auto center got removed in Halo 5 because, well, I mean, I'm not entirely sure why, apparently. But, you know, that got removed. Gears doesn't have it. You know, so to be able to automatically readjust your gun and then re-aim from there, you know, that's a simple thing that should be really useful. You know, targeting assists, you know, while that could be considered cheating, if it's done correctly to accommodate a fact that you've got no sight, you know, that could be great. So it's a matter of then, you know, working those ideas into competitive modes as well. Because it's mostly within the game itself. It's not normally within live that the frustration comes along. It's normally because, oh, I don't know, I have to fight this guy twice, and then I find out I have to fight this guy twice, so then that gets me really annoyed because I don't want to fight him again. Yeah. So, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, same with, I don't know, like, sometimes knowing who's in your party as well, when people just join, and it's just like, oh, I know who's come into the party, but I'm not necessarily sure who's talking, and then there's that thing of, oh, what's your tag? You know, because then you sort of have to then associate, because everybody else can see it. Everybody else is like, oh, look on the little corner of the screen. But I think it's going to just be a process of adjustment. As games become more accessible, people are hopefully going to become more accommodating as gamers when they run into blind people. And who knows? I've had people leave their settings sort of when I've taught people how to play KI with only audio. They've left their settings like that for a while. And because they're that interested in it works. So who knows? It might just be about having, you know, tutorial videos on YouTube about how it all works, even from like a platform side, you know, basically promoting the fact that Xbox is an accessible console. Because, you know, once people know, oh, this is why my console's talking, it's not because it's been possessed. people have said things like that, believe me. It's like, oh, narrator's on. And it's like, yeah, I know what narrator is. And they're like, oh, I don't know. My console's talking to me. This is not normal. And then I'm like, just press menu and press guide and menu. So, yeah, I think it would just be a matter of promotion and sort of working to get blind gamers involved, sort of mainstream gamers who are willing to involved in sort of team stuff as well. So,
fantastic. Well, Sightless, I want to thank you so much for coming in and giving your talk. I apologize for the technical difficulties. Story of my life. But thank you again. And again, we'll have opportunities to chat with Sightless later this afternoon. So thank you.